Welcome to On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind, a podcast emphasizing the heart's role in happiness, in sound decision-making, and in being at our best. Hi, my name is Ron Schneebaum. I'm a physician, work at the outpatient arm of the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and serve on the clinical faculty at Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine. I'm convinced that nothing's more important to the human psyche than love. I've worked at thinking with both heart and mind for over 40 years. While intellectual analysis generally carries the banner of thinker, to leave out the heart is to leave out something vital. Language reminds us of the importance of the heart. To do something half-heartedly, or to not put our hearts into an activity, means we didn't do it well. And to be heartless is not a compliment. We involve our hearts wherever we care the most, where heart and mind work together, we're happier, have richer relationships, and greater practical success. We are fully present and we are fully ourselves. It's the art of living well. Episode 18, Love, It's Strength and Power with Heart and Mind. I'd been working on a two-part series about emotions and feelings when another episode bubbled into my consciousness and wouldn't let go. I now see that it's a bridge between the first and second in this series, and it also stands alone. I present it here as a bonus episode. While developing this episode, a story came to mind that I loved as a boy, and now I see that it holds clues to the episode's topic. It's one of the Grimm's fairy tales, and it's called Sweet Porridge. A poor but pious girl lived in a small village with her mother. One day, they had no food, so the girl went into the forest, and there she met an old woman who understood her problems and gave her a pot. She said to the girl, "When you say to this pot, 'Cook, little pot, cook,' it will make wonderful sweet porridge. To stop its cooking, you need to say, 'Stop, little pot, stop.'" So the girl took it home, and she and her mother were freed from hunger. One day the girl went out, and the mother wanted some porridge. So she said, "Cook, little pot, cook," and she had all the porridge that she needed. She realized, however, that she never learned how to tell the pot to stop cooking. The pot continued to cook, and it bubbled over the edge. Soon it filled the whole kitchen and then the house. It continued outside the house, out into the street, and filled the next house and the next. The little girl came home just before the last house of the village was filled with porridge. She said, "Stop, little pot, stop," and the pot stopped cooking, and all those who wanted to return to their homes had to eat their way back. The Grimm brothers collected folk tales that villagers and peasants told to their children and published their first collection in 1812. These stories were not only meant as entertainment for their children, they were tales on how to live life well. As this story came to mind, I then worked through it to find how and whether it indeed meshes with the topic of love and its strength and power with heart and mind. I first had to think about the meaning of this sweet porridge and realized that it was about love, that love is that entity that we take in and nourishes us. The beginning part of the story corroborated this concept, for it states that the girl was not only poor, she was pious. In one translation, it said that she was good. And her attitude toward life opened her to love. For love, while it enriches and strengthens, is different from a precious object that we can pick up and grab hold of. Fill ourselves with love, we have to open to love. Another clue in this story was the old woman in the forest who gave her this magical pot. When these tales spoke of an old person in the forest who offered something that was seemingly impossible, it meant that what they gave was a gift that had a transcendent nature to it, and love, as we know, has a transcendent quality. we can recognize that same feeling of love across cultures and throughout history. If the serial was about love, then another key part of the story was about it being overwhelming and it needing to be stopped. This was a puzzle. For what is it that could be overwhelming about love? What could make it stop, and why would it need to be stopped? To work through this, I stepped back and a thought came to mind of polarities, that in our earthly life, we live between complete opposites. One isn't better than another, but we can't live in the extremes. There's hot and cold, wet and dry, light and dark. We can't live in extreme heat, and we can't live in extreme cold. Between the two is the whole richness and complexity of life. To understand love in this context, I had to go a little bit deeper. For this wasn't merely about love. It was about love as strength and nourishment. For this girl and her mother took in the cereal. That's what made them strong. That's what made them not be hungry. So when we open ourselves to love and take in love, it changes how we see and act in the world. It's through love, for example, that we have compassion for another. If we saw someone fall, we would go to their aid through our love. We even sacrifice our well-being through love. When we think with love, we imagine that we have the problem. We even sacrifice through love. If someone we cared about were ill, we would stay by their bedside as they needed us and forego our own comfort. This capacity to care for another with sacrificing our own comfort can even lead to our losing our very life. We consider those who sacrifice their lives to aid others to be our greatest heroes. That's when I realized that this story, that the love in this story, is about thinking with heart and mind. For the mind, or the intellect, is the exact opposite. It is completely without emotions. It is calculating. If we're solving a math problem, for example, there's nothing of compassion in that. And it's the same if we're building a motor. We think about the materials we have, the power we need, and use all of our mathematical and physical calculations to achieve our goal. Full human thinking partners these two. Surgeons who care about their patients exhibit this. They commonly meet and talk with them before the surgery and tell them that all will be well. During the surgery, however, they want nothing of their emotions present. They need to be completely focused on the tissue that needs repair, so that every attempt is made to take the human being out of the situation. Drapes are used to cover the entire body and leave only the area that's going to be worked on open. This provides a sterile field, but it also allows the surgeon to focus only on that tissue and not think about the human being. In addition, a sort of a tent is put up so that the person's face is not seen by the surgeon. That aspect is taken care of by the anesthetist who is sitting there. When we lead with the heart, we picture a person's situation and try as hard as we can to see through that person's eyes. If, for example, we're thinking of a present for a loved one, we picture that person, what they like, and we try to imagine the possibilities that we could get. We think with our intellects as well, so that we look for the present that's appropriate, that costs the amount that we think is reasonable, and look until we find exactly what we think would work. Heart and mind can be seen working together through another story. This one is from my own personal experience. I was an elementary school teacher after graduating from college and first taught 5th grade at PS 106 in Bushwick in Brooklyn. I then earned a master's degree and taught at the Garden City Waldorf School, a private school on Long Island, where I taught 5th grade and then took the same class for sixth grade. The school had an association with a summer camp, a Camp Glenbrook, and during the fall and winter, some of the classes spent a week at Camp Glenbrook learning subjects in a way that they couldn't learn them back home on Long Island, including astronomy, local history, crafts, and ecology. Our class went to Glenbrook in late October of the sixth grade year. On one of the days we were there, I took the 27 children and two graduate students, and we hiked nearby Mount Monadnock. We had a wonderful hike on the way up, spent some time on the top of the mountain where we had lunch and drinks, and we had abundant leftovers and packed them up for the way down. And on the way down, several of the children discovered a boulder just off the trail. This boulder had a sheer face and was at about a 45-degree angle and provided a wonderful slide. We spent some time there where the kids would climb up and down this rock and slide back down. And then I thought we could add a little more adventure to the hike by going off trail on the way down. I thought we could zig to the left, and then after going for a bit, we'd stop and go back to the right, crossing the trail, and then we'd go further down and cross the trail again and continue this zig and zag. So we did this, and we met many adventures along the way. But at one point, after we zigged left and we zigged to the right, we couldn't find the trail anymore. It was gone. We looked in a very organized way, and we were lost. It was now late in the afternoon, and I realized that I had 27 children with me, with two graduate students, and we were lost on the mountainside. I knew the summer camp would be looking for us, so I thought what we needed to do was to get ourselves to a safe place. So I looked for a spot that was a little bit higher up, that was somewhat flat, and I said to the class, "We're lost, and what we have to do is we have to prepare for any eventuality, even possibly having to spend the night here." I told them that there would be rescue parties out looking for us, and that we would be found, that we still had food left over, and we had lots of drinks, and we had enough clothing to be able to keep ourselves warm. In the meantime, I said, "Let's do three things. I'd like some of you to gather the biggest rocks you can carry and form them into a ring so we can make a fire." I once read that John Muir, who was a naturalist and the reason for our national parks, would sometimes lie on pine boughs, and that would keep his body from the cold ground. So I said, "Some, I'd like you to gather pine boughs, and others, look for logs that we can use for firewood." We spent our time doing this, and before it got dark, we had successfully gathered what we needed. We'd built a wonderful fire with a large enough ring so that we could all stand around it. And just at a moment when it felt like, besides the sun going down, so was our good mood, one of the graduate students, who had a guitar with her, began to sing. Now, in this school, kids sing and do crafts and do artwork from first grade. And the music director, George Rose, who was an embodiment of music and the most wonderful music teacher I could imagine, taught these children many, many, many songs. And we stood around the fire and sang and sang and sang. Every once in a while, we'd see a plane in the sky. There were no leaves on the trees so that we could see clearly, and we weren't under any trees. We were in a bit of a clearing. I told the class to put pine boughs on the fire so our blaze would heighten and a plane above could see us. We did that. The fire grew very bright, but we had no luck. As the evening wore on, we saw a plane that seemed to be flying lower than the rest. I thought this was it. The next day was one of the students' birthdays, so we all said to David Resnick, "Okay, David, now it's time to make your birthday wish." And we put lots of our pine boughs on the fire. The flames roared up, and we saw the plane circle overhead. And it circled around us and around us, and before long, a rescue party came on foot. I later discovered that a beaver pond was built where the trail was, and that's how we lost the trail. This story parallels the one about sweet porridge, though it might take a bit of poetic license to see how. In the first story, the cereal, or love, was a gift that was given to the girl and her mother. They took it in and it changed them. It strengthened them, nourished them, and took away their fears. The same could be said about the fire. This too was a gift, and if we just step back and imagine that we had never seen a fire in the forest in the dark at night, we would be amazed at the blaze. And just as love filled them, it was the warmth of the sun that was captured by the trees that filled us. We also took in the light of this fire deeply within, and it strengthened us and took away our fear. Once we were rescued, a bus took us back to Glenbrook, and I overheard Nikki Pitt and John Buckley talking, probably the biggest and maybe the toughest in the class, and one said to the other, "Were you afraid?" And the other said, "Just a little." I also tell this story because it highlights the title of the podcast, On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind. It demonstrates two different kinds of happiness, one that comes out of our intellectual practical thinking. I felt good that I realized our situation stopped early enough so we can make preparations for the evening. Had I not done that, things would not have gone as well at all. I can feel good about my practical achievements, and this occurs throughout life. When we touch another, when we serve another, we achieve another kind of happiness. We achieve a kind of happiness that, as we do it enough, it turns into a feeling of joy. Besides feeling good about our practical accomplishments, I also felt good about the lessons that these kids learned. We took a situation that could have potentially been disastrous, and instead the kids saw that if you keep your head, you can find a way through that will work. I thought this is invaluable. As we work with our heart and mind in all setting and situations, we will have a life where we strengthen ourselves, where we enjoy ourselves, and through our efforts on the behalf of others, our hearts glow. I believe the school also appreciated the valuable learning experience that was gained through this episode. Nobody ever spoke to me about it. Nobody from the administration ever called me in, and no parent ever criticized me for it, though I'd lost 27 of their children in this private school on a mountainside. I thought this quite wonderful until one day, many years later, I was in that same town and went to a local diner. I mentioned that I was the teacher when the class got lost on Mount Monadnock, and one of them talked about the incredible risk that the rescuers undertook, that while we were safely ensconced and singing songs, there were people racing up and down that mountains, risking their well-being looking for us. I also, in later years, realized that as a hiker, that's a terrible thing to do to a well-worn trail, that by veering off the trail, we've endangered the ecology of the area. I developed this podcast because I believe in the importance of the idea that full human thinking partners both heart and mind. I received nothing financial from this podcast and don't intend to. It is my way of giving back. Normally, at the end of each episode, I offer some exercises for interested listeners to use to help to incorporate these ideas. Since this is a bonus episode, I won't be doing that. On the other hand, there is one exercise, and that's to share it. If you know anyone who you think would value this episode, anyone who you think could use a little bit of light and love in their lives, please share it. This podcast, based on your sharing, is heard across the United States, and it's heard worldwide. I publish these podcasts in Manchester, New Hampshire, and this podcast is now listened to in China, in Russia, in South Korea, in Lebanon, in Israel, in every continent of the world except Antarctica. And it's only by your sharing that this has happened. I so appreciate that. If you have any questions and want to contact me, please write questions in the subject line of your email, and it's ron@onbeinghappier.com. If you have any comments about this episode or about future episodes, there too, write comments in the subject line. And if you'd like to receive a newsletter that one day I really will get to, write newsletter in the subject line. I so appreciate the time that we have to get together. I look forward to our next time. Until then, all my very best and be well, Ron.